Report and possible discussion on external audit plan by John Hawes.
Again, this is just a report only, and I'm going to introduce our external auditors who are coming up here. Grant Thornton has been our auditor. This will be actually the fifth year of the audit engagement that they are just about to begin. In fact, have already started. They've been out here. And Ben Conley, their partner, is here to go through this presentation.
Good morning. And I hope that wasn't noise I was making. Didn't intend that to be, but anyway. You should have distributed, and you'll also see on the front screen here, it's really just our preliminary package to discuss with the committee and ultimately the board before we embark on the audit. It's really on the front end, even though we did start last week. We'll be auditing the authority's activities for the next several weeks. I wanted to make a brief introduction to John Deesa. John's actually working as engagement manager with me this year. Manager who you've known the last couple of years, Michelle Belia, is still with the firm, but just had a baby not too long ago, so she's going to be off this cycle by the same token. I wanted to make sure that I introduced John, and obviously, as John Hawes had mentioned, the rest of the team is here on site actually doing the audit. Wanted to cover a few things, and again, this is the preliminary meeting before the audit. Ultimately, we'll be back to in January to present the final results of the audit. Cover a couple things: responsibilities, scope and timing, key areas of audit focus, and then also a fraud discussion, as we typically have. In terms of our responsibilities, obviously, you've engaged us to perform an audit. An audit ultimately is designed to provide reasonable but not absolute assurance. And what I mean by that is that we don't test every single transaction. We certainly have a risk-based approach. We focus on the things that we think may be more inclined to be materially misstated, but we don't select every transaction for testing, and by not testing every transaction, we can't provide absolute assurance, but we can certainly provide reasonable assurance that the financial statements are fairly presented. We, at the completion of the audit, will express an opinion on those financial statements, let you know that they are and or are not materially correct, fairly presented, and that they conform with generally accepted accounting principles. If there are material weaknesses or significant deficiencies in internal controls that we note as a part of our audit, we'll are required professionally to communicate those to you, and certainly will do so. And I think the key thing, an audit does not either relieve you or management of your responsibilities. The next page is we have also have responsibilities for other information documents containing audited financial statements. Once we issue our financial statements, our opinion on the financial statements, along with the authority issuance of those financials, at times, organizations may issue debt, so these financial statements may be included elsewhere, an official statement, for instance, annual report. To the extent that they're included in another document, we're required to read the information, aren't necessarily required to corroborate it. It's not going to be audited, but we do have to consider whether the information provided in those other documents is materially inconsistent with the financial statements that we conducted our audit upon. And then, obviously, if there are any significant differences, we would call those to management's attention. Next page is really management's responsibilities, and obviously, even though it's only half a page here, there's probably should be several pages here in terms of the volume of information they provide to us as part of the audit. But just generically, they're responsible for preparing and fairly presenting the financial statements, as well as the schedule of expenditures of federal and state awards, which is really the federal and state grants that the authority receives and the compliance with those grants. Management is also tasked with establishing and maintaining effective internal control over the financial reporting as well as compliance, as I indicated. And then they provide us with formal written representations at the completion of the audit, which we will also provide those representations to this group as is now required under current auditing standards. Next section is really the scope and timing. We approach the authority's audit by obtaining an understanding of the organization, obviously the environment in which you operate. Use that knowledge and understanding as well as our experience in the sector to analyze the financial statements. Part of that analysis is dependent upon determining materiality. And there have been some auditing standards to kind of change the documentation requirements of that and how you ultimately can determine that. And I'm going to cover that a little bit more on an expanded basis here in just a second. But really what we're trying to do is identify those areas that, again, may be more likely to be materially misstated, and then focusing our audit attention and effort on those areas. I mentioned I'd expand on materiality. I think there's been a number of changes in the profession over the last couple of years and some standards that have been updated to do that. But really, we have to evaluate what would be material. And by materiality, I'm really talking about the magnitude of an omission or misstatement that likely would influence a reasonable person's judgment regarding those financials. Obviously, there's a number of users, including bondholders, as well as management, as well as the governance aspect, the organization, board, audit committee, et cetera. So we have to try to determine what's appropriate based on the users of the financials. Based on relevant benchmarks, and typically for most governmental organizations, because of the lack of profit motive, really does typically come back to evaluating assets as the appropriate materiality benchmark. Once we assess that, it'll be a small percentage of that, we ultimately evaluate which financial statement items are in excess of materiality. And then we perform testing on those account balances and groups, classes of transactions, et cetera. There are other areas that are below materiality that also could be in scope if they're indicative of what I would call really qualitative factors, other things that are important there to consider, related party transactions, potential fraud, bond coverage requirements, et cetera. In terms of the audit timeline, we did our planning as we typically do and conduct preliminary audit field work in advance of this meeting. It was done in the August-September timeframe. Obviously, if you look at the October-November column, we're meeting with the committee this morning. We are in the process, as John indicated and I mentioned, performing our final field work over the next several weeks. We typically conduct weekly status meetings as we go throughout the audit to make sure that management's apprised of our status, as well as if we have schedules we're missing or potential audit adjustments or potential internal control findings. We typically would discuss those on a weekly basis to make sure everybody's in the loop. And we'll ultimately have a closing meeting with management as we complete the audit during next month in November. In December, January, obviously finalize the financial statements, provide comments, et cetera, to management, develop an internal control deficiency letter, which would summarize the comments that we've provided as part of the audit. We'd meet again with this committee at your meeting in January and or the board has determined to communicate the results of the audit, issue the final reports, and those reports ultimately be sent by management onto the regulatory agencies and other users of the financials. The reports that will be issued really in two categories, the financial statement audit, and again, obviously, we audit the retirement plan. We do that separate time frame, but in terms of this audit, this would really be two reports, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or CAFR, as well as a single audit, and again, that's the OMB Circular A-133 report. We also, again, as I mentioned, if we have material weaknesses or significant deficiencies, we're required to formally communicate those. Typically, if we don't, we would still formalize some recommendations for management to consider, even if they're best practices in nature, to discuss as part of the audit. Page 11, just so you'll have our names and email addresses as well as phone numbers to the extent you need to call us after today. If you have anything that you need to, you know, touch base with us on, you can certainly contact me as the engagement partner. You can also contact John or Jennifer Billows, our engagement senior, if you prefer. In terms of the key areas of focus on the audit, there's really a number of those, and obviously we don't go through the detailed work program, keep everybody sane this morning. But we do spend a lot of time focused on these areas, and again, they're subsets of these items. Certainly governance, everything from tone at the top to ultimately how management establishes their controls and ensures that those controls are in place and operating effectively in the key areas. Fraud inquiries, actually we're responsible for making those, of the governance aspect of the organization, which I will make just a minute, make inquiries to this group regarding any knowledge of fraud. Cash and investments, obviously, is a pretty significant area. We'll spend time there without going through the details again. Capital assets, payables and debt, major revenue and expenditure categories, as well as assessing the adequacy of the disclosures. There's a number, actually increasing number, of footnotes that are required to be disclosed in the financial statements, and we'll certainly spend time evaluating the wording of those, as well as the content, make sure that the numbers are accurate and complete and agree to the rest of the financial statements. I'd mention the single audit as well, and again, the audit of the federal and state grant compliance. Again, we don't test every program. There's a risk-based approach that's required to help us as the external audit firm in terms of selecting which programs should be tested. It's done on a risk-based approach. There's consideration given to audits that were done in previous years based on the results of those. You do have some flexibility to the extent there's significant findings in the past. You really would test the large programs to the extent they've had significant findings. In terms of our selection, these are the three programs that ultimately met the criteria to be considered major programs in the current year. There's really two federal programs. The first number really on the left-hand side there is the CFDA number, the Catalog of Federal Domestic Assistance number. That's how the federal government defines grants by numerical sequence. The first two really being the grantor agency, the last three being the program. The 97036, the disaster grants, public assistance, presidentially declared disasters program will be selected as a major program this year, as well as 15605, the sport fish restoration program. On the state program side, the Clean Rivers program will be selected for testing during the current year. And actually, a lot of our work has been certainly started and completed in that area, and we'll be focusing on trying to wrap that up over the next several weeks. Really, the last thing in terms of formal communications is, as I do on an annual basis, as required by professional standards, we're required to make inquiries of those charged with governance in an organization. And it's really on two things. One is any knowledge or awareness you may have of fraud that's occurred in the organization during the past year, and then really a discussion of potential areas of concern. So as we wrap up here before I ask questions and answers, I'd like at least to ask the question, is anybody aware of any known or potential fraud that's occurred in the authority's operations during the current fiscal year? I didn't hear or see any acknowledgement of any fraud that's occurred within the organization. That being said, no knowledge of fraud, are there any particular areas of concern that this group has in terms of areas that you want to make sure that we're focused on that maybe I haven't covered, and I didn't cover all the details, but any particular areas of concern you may want us to spend some time in over the next several weeks as we embark on the audit? With that, that's all my prepared formal comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have at this time.
Any questions for him? And thank you.
Thanks. Look forward to meeting back with you in January.